Hello, this is Reverend Judith Laxer. Thank you for listening to the podcast of our service entitled Every Precious Minute. Gaia's Temple is happy to offer this podcast for those who can't join us in person. My wish is that the food for thought offered brings great nourishment for your soul. Our ministry for the goddess is supported by those who partake of its teachings. If you feel served by listening, please push the donate button now and give generously. We'd be most grateful. Thank you, and blessed be. Well, my friends, I spent a little while reading back over some of the October services that I've offered here in Gaia's Temple over the years, and they have spanned everything from the origins of Halloween to examining death on the life cycle to getting our affairs in order so we don't leave a mess behind for our beloveds to deal with to healing our ancestral wounds. We've worked on forgiving someone on the other side who we felt did us wrong when we shared this life. We've looked at the sad history of violence and fear about witches and witchcraft. We've learned that it was MGM wanting the Wicked Witch of the West to look especially repugnant in The Wizard of Oz, so they gave her green skin. And that was the first time a witch was depicted with green skin. That was in 1939. We've learned that the reason for dressing in costumes for the holiday, which originally was dressing in traditional clothing for our ancestral lineage, so that our ancestors could find us and visit on the night when the veil parts between the worlds of the living and dead. Conversely, we learned that wearing costumes was a way to hide from our ancestors if we didn't want them to find us, you know. Old, nasty old Aunt Mabel with a mean streak, and a grudge. We learned that the act of collecting candy was originally sharing sweets to soothe our hearts, our sorrowing hearts, and as we honored our beloved dead. And I've also talked about how our culture sadly does everything it can to stay in denial of this inevitable aspect of the life cycle, death, from worshiping youth and dismissing the elderly to trying to stay young looking at all costs, even at the expense of our health. We've looked at what it means to identify as a witch and how most of us don't come from pagan families, so we know and know intimately what it feels like not to belong in our family of origin and the greater culture around us, what it feels like to constantly be fighting the centuries of propaganda about witchcraft and witches, forever fighting the myths about being evil and devil worshippers and immoral and frightening, none of which is true. None of which is true. I've talked about the choices we make for our lives before we enter them, and the contracts we make with others so that we make sure we fulfill them. And I've talked about how the soul is unemotional and that its agenda is that we evolve, simply that, and that we evolve through experiences of all kinds. And sometimes those experiences are joyful or sorrowful or hurtful or blissful. We will choose the good and the bad and the easy and the difficult because we need to know all of it on our soul's journey of evolution. So today, as the season progresses from late autumn to early winter and Samhain, the hallowed night, the night when the veil between the worlds of the living and the dead part and we may more easily connect with our ancestors, I thought it would be a good idea to deeply contemplate our mortality. To talk less about the trappings of the holiday, although the orange and black of it, the witchy hattiness of it, the crisp autumn pumpkin of it is quite pleasing. I am wearing my orange socks with the black kitty cats on them today. Exactly. But I thought we'd talk more about our time here and how it is best spent, and to really think about how sometime in the future we will all leave our bodies and this precious earth. Now, I know we are the ones who've all been raised and live in the very culture that doesn't like to look squarely at death and dying. We'd rather stay in denial. Sure, others die, not me. I'm not going to die. I'm going to live forever. And, you know, in a way, that is true, because from a pagan perspective, we believe that our souls are eternal. The core of who we are, the essence of ourselves, our very souls, are eternal. They come back into form and die out of form again and again on the great wheel of existence. So So in a way, we might say that we do live forever, but the form we were most recently born into will not. We arise from the earth, and to the earth we return. Our souls check into these bodies when we are born into this reality, this dimension, this world we call life. And then when we are finished here, we leave our bodies, and we call that dying. We leave this temporary body, this impermanent temple that houses our spirit, and we turn to the place between the worlds that some pagans call the Summerland, the place the Celts called Avalon, the Isle of Apples, the place the Buddhists call the Bardo, in between lifetimes. And when I say it like that, it sounds simple enough. Oh yes, we come here to learn, and then when we've learned and we're done, we leave. In the most simplistic way, that is very true. But once we get here, we inhabit bodies that have these little things called nerve endings and emotions and stress response, and perhaps even more impactful to these experiences, egos, our sense of self and identity, that cause us to get and stay rather attached to things, to people, to how we want our life to be, to our judgments about the world, and on and on and on. So I don't think we have these things when we leave the body and return to spirit. We leave our nerve endings and our emotions and our stress responses and our egos behind and all of our attachments because we don't need them in the spirit realm. We need them to learn with, but once we have learned, they're no longer necessary. It's like those things are a package deal that come with the body. You want to live in a body? Great. You'll need nerve endings and emotions and stress responses and egos. Here you go. And you'll need them to help you make sense of your experience. Oh, this hurts. It must be bad. Oh, this feels good. This feels fine. It must be good. Or to keep you from danger. Oh, I smell smoke. It's uncomfortably hot. Time to get out of here. Or through our emotions to register on the soul. It's our emotions that register our experience on the soul, so it knows it's had the experience. Oh, I am cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. I must be in love, right? Or, oh, I've been betrayed. I am furious, and I hate, right? It's the emotions that register the experience on the soul. They make their imprint on the soul. And don't we know that to be true? I mean, that's why we hold grudges, right? The strong emotional impression we get makes it difficult to let go and move on. So while the idea of coming and going makes sense and seems easy to wrap around in spiritual terms, the actual leaving of the body once we have inhabited it, it's not as easy as it sounds. And most likely, it's kind of physically painful. I mean, all death is due one way or another to cardiac arrest, right? At some point, heart stops, game over. And that's got to hurt, right? We can surmise that it's true from those we know who have had a heart attack. We've witnessed the pain that they go through. Or maybe we've had a heart attack ourselves and we know exactly what that's like. Or we've seen someone who is so sad or emotionally distraught that they wither away until they leave their body, and that's another kind of pain. Now, for all we know, the experience of birth is also physically painful. I can imagine that being pushed out of the warm, dark, safe womb of our mother through a tight birth canal, which to her seems like it's the largest thing that ever was, but to us probably doesn't, into the cold, bright world is painful. But the part of our brain that forms memories has not yet developed, and so we have no conscious memory of being born. So we don't really know. But anyway, I think one way or another we can all agree that the act of being born and the act of dying are ordeals. Let's just put it that way. Those two rites of passage beyond all others are challenging, to say the least. And yet, we do them again and again and again. Pagan spirituality embraces reincarnation because we don't see ourselves separate from or different from anything in nature. I've said this a million times in Gaia's Temple. I'm just going to keep saying it over and over. We witness how the flora and the fauna go dormant during the winter and come to life again in the spring. And when we look at nature's life cycle, it makes sense that we would do the same. We live, and then we die, and then and then we die. And in between lifetimes, when we go beyond the veil to the land of the dead, however we perceive that liminal place, we rest and we reassess how we did in the past lifetime. We consider the lessons we still need to learn, the experiences we still need to have, and often they are the same thing. And we make contracts with others to make sure that they will happen. And then, when the time is right, we look down and find the two we chose to be our mother and father either making love or making in vitro, and we jump in to get going for another round. Now, I find reincarnation to be really comforting, but I don't just believe in reincarnation because of the comfort it gives me. I believe it because I have a felt sense of it in my bones. It makes sense to me. I have past life memories. I've met people in this life that I know I have known in another. I've gone to places for the first time where I know I've been before, like Glastonbury in England and Athens and Eleusina in Greece. So reincarnation is not a strange concept to me. This is my truth. The concept that we only live once and that we'd better get it right or there will be hell to pay, that is a very strange concept to me. But reincarnation, oh yeah, that works. So the comfort of that is not just that if I make a mistake in this life, I'll have another chance in the next life. And by the way, I'm going to make mistakes in this life because we don't come here to get it right. We come here to learn. And for some reason, mistakes are part of the learning process, right? Now, although I do believe that it is true that we'll always have the choice to come back and try it again, the comfort goes deeper than that. Because when I think of this as my soul's journey of evolution, I hope to be evolving into a better human being life after life after life. I hope with each life I'm learning to be wiser, to be kinder, to be more generous, and more forgiving. That is what I am working on in this life for sure. And I hope that the sum of my lives are like pearls on a necklace, you know, creating and increasing in beauty along the way, and beauty that serves the world. That is a comfort to me. Now, I might not feel that comfort as I go through the deep lessons that are usually painful in the short term, but when I think of my soul's journey over time, I find comfort in that long-term understanding, in the bigger picture. Now, for those of us following the wheel of the year for a while, we know which seasons we like best. And when we get to that season, we rejoice and we relish it. And when that season ends, we are sad and we feel its loss. But one way or another, we know how much we appreciate the season we like because of the seasons we don't. Our appreciation for the good times is enhanced due to the bad times, or what we perceive to be the bad times. It's the same for all of our experiences, not just the seasonal ones. We don't think about how good we feel until we get sick. We don't think about our freedom until it's threatened. We don't think about the preciousness of love until we lose a beloved. We don't always seem, don't it always seem to go that we don't know what we've got till it's gone. The paved paradise. Very good. So, not us, of course. We always walk around completely conscious of our blessings 24/7. And actually, I do think that most of us here do that quite well. I do think that we remain pretty conscious of our blessings. But even for those of us who do, we often lose our focus on that, and we get distracted by the act of living life in the 21st century, and we temporarily forget. And when we do forget, when our focus shifts to what is wrong, what's wrong with ourselves, with others, with the world, it takes us down, doesn't it? Yes, it does. Our vitality drops, the vibration our energy emits into the world drops, and in those times, we feel we have gone from the heights of wonderfulness to the valley of awfulness. And we feel when we are in the deep valley of despair, or illness, or confusion, or hopelessness, or longing, or fear, or anxiety, the list goes on. It's really good to remember when we are there that we are feeling these things to help us grow. Our growing pains can be quite painful, but they are growing pains. And if we can remember that at the worst of it, that our growing edge is uncomfortable at the very least and downright painful at the worst, but if we can remember that it is for our growth, even at the worst of it, we can navigate more successfully through that valley. It might not be as simple as clicking our heels 3 times in our ruby slippers, but our souls have our back. We chose this very thing. When we're born, we come through the veil of forgetfulness and we don't remember what we chose, so that when we come through a hardship, we go, why me? Like, oh, why me, right? Because I chose it. What was I thinking? That's why I think the soul is not emotional. Because if it had emotions, it would say, ooh, no, I don't want that. I'm not going to do that. But it doesn't have an emotion. It says, oh, I've never been that horrible person. Great. I'm going to jump in and do that now. Mm-hmm. Anyway, our souls have our back because we chose it on some level. And if we did, so that we can learn to release the pain as we experience it, or learn to calm our anxiety and worrying, or learn to cool our anger and let go of judgment, learn to breathe deeply and take better care of ourselves until we restore, or learn to endure hardship, if that's the lesson that we need to know, it really helps to keep our growth and evolution in mind as our souls take us walking down into that valley.
Must you go to find what your footsteps already know? The way on is the way out. There are signs to follow. There is deep in the valley, and I'm bound to go. How deep in the valley must you stay to know why your footsteps led you that way? The way on may be truly to stand in one place. Let the deep of the valley fill you with grace, and treat yourself lightly, treat yourself kind. You got nothing to worry on, you will be fine. You will leave this place laughing, and somebody will cry. There is deep in the valley, wonder not why. Wonder not why, go, and wonder not to stay. If it takes me and I follow, or if I lead the way, it can come when it wants to, but it might have to wait. There is deep in the valley, I don't hesitate. Well, I don't take it too lightly, but it don't weigh down too low. There is high on the cliff top, and there's deep creeks below. There's a green shade you can't miss, where the spring water flows. There is deep in the valley, and I'm bound to go. How deep in the valley must you go to find what your footsteps already know? The way on is a way out. There are signs to follow. There is deep in the valley, and I'm bound to go.
Woo-hoo! Thank you. Thank you. That was beautiful. So it's a comfort to know that we'll have plenty of opportunities to learn and to grow, not just in this lifetime, but in others if we so need. And it's a comfort to know, at least it is to me, that there's no angry God in the sky waiting to punish us for being bad. But that doesn't mean that we should be a slacker. We have work to do, important soul work. And as we get older, we come to realize that life is indeed really short in the scheme of things. We don't really have all that much time to accomplish what we're here to do. So just because we can come back and do it again doesn't mean we ought to, especially if some of those lessons are difficult. Why come back and have to do them again? Get the lessons now while we're here. Don't waste a precious minute. So here's what I think. I think that the things that we desire show us the way for our greatest growth in each life. That we have longings and desires, emotions that come with being in the body, right? That point the way toward our greatest lessons as well as our greatest gifts for the world. And I love how often they are one and the same. For example, you might long to be a doctor, to have a desire to be a healing force in the world. And the challenges of medical school and internship and opening a practice all provide exactly what your soul needs to grow. Discipline, responsibility, education, and hopefully a good med side manner. And of course, we need healers in the world. So your becoming a doctor is mutually beneficial. You grow personally and bring healing to the world. That is in much need of it. Now, thinking karmically, that old what goes around comes around. You might have been healed by another in a past life, and now it's your turn to return the favor. Or you may have caused illness in a past life, and now it's time for you to course correct. You might long to become physically stronger and more fit, and then find yourself digging up a garden bed in your backyard. And before you know it, working the land brings great vitality, you're learning botany, and you're saving the rainforest. As many of you know, I desired to be a star on Broadway, and all my training in the performing arts was really for my work as a priestess and a minister. And 17 years of Gaia's Temple beats a Tony Award any day of the week, I'll tell you that. Now you see where I'm going, right? What we desire brings us on the path of our growth and evolution, as well as helps us hone and bring our gifts to the world. So don't dismiss your desires. Don't dismiss yourself as undeserving, that old Judeo-Christian power over construct. Contemplate your desires. Get clear on what they are. Do everything you can to ethically, that is to say by doing no harm, satisfy your loftiest desires, because they are messages from your soul, guiding lights on the path of your spiritual development. Beacons to follow on your journey of evolution. Now, at the end of 2011 and the beginning of 2012, I talked a lot about the end of the Mayan calendar. Remember the big prophecy that was associated to it? And about it was essentially about the end of the Piscean Age and the beginning of the Aquarian Age. And if I could encapsulate what the changing of these ages means, I'd do it like this. The Piscean Age was one in which we looked to the leader to tell us what to do, how to think, and what to believe. Right? The times of the great masters, Jesus and Buddha and Allah. And the Aquarian Age is one in which we look to our own highest sensibilities about what to do and think and believe. And the concept is that by now we have evolved enough in past eras to already know what is best to do and to think and to believe. Now, this doesn't mean that we no longer need guidance or wise teachers or leaders, but this sort of blind faith, oh, the leader said it, it must be true, those days are over. And that's true right here in Gaia's temple, too. If I say something that doesn't work for you, doesn't make sense to you, doesn't resonate, don't listen, don't follow. Trust what you know inside yourself. In the Aquarian Age, we check what the leaders say against our own knowing, and if we agree, we follow. But if we don't, we don't follow. The sign of Aquarius is the sign of humanitarianism. And if an astrological sign could have an agenda, Aquarius's is for fairness and equality, which is why I think all our nation's shadow stuff about racial injustice and bigotry is coming right to the forefront right now. We can't heal our humanitarian wounds until we know exactly what and where they are. So looking, yay! Let's look at that hard stuff. So looking back to this big wheel of existence and our choice to come back into this lifetime, I think our generation, or those of us who are alive on the planet at this time, have a particular mission beyond just ourselves. I think we chose to be here for these times, as difficult as they are, to be the change makers, the healers, the cultural creatives to help in the great turning. The ones who hold fast to morality and work for justice so there can be peace, to care for the earth as we care for our own mother, because that's exactly what she is. Now, I bring this up because another big picture to keep in mind when we contemplate our mortality and our own soul's evolution is how our personal growth benefits the world in which we live, right? We're not isolated. It's all connected. So it's not enough to just forgive a family member for a past slight long ago. The question is, are we becoming a more forgiving person? It's not enough to release our fear and come out of the closet, whether that's the broom closet or the gay closet or the shoe fetish closet or whatever closet you feel shamed enough to be hiding in. But are we releasing our fear of all others regarding our differences? I mean, what good is conquering our fear and coming out of the closet if we just judge everybody else because they're different than we are? It's not enough to work to build our own wealth and security. How generous and charitable are we? So you see how our personal growth must somehow also benefit the world in the Aquarian Age of humanitarianism. And I think that those incarnated now, that's all of us here, with bodies and nerve endings and stress responses and emotions and egos, have a particular mission, a very special and crucial mission, to steer this ship in a better direction than the one in which it's going. And my friends, there is no time like the present to put our hands on that steering wheel. So if you would, once more, close your eyes and go within. Reconnect to your grounding cord that we established at the beginning of this service. And if you didn't do that, you came in late, go ahead and ground yourself now. And then bring your attention up to your third eye in the center of your forehead. Imagine it like an actual eye, just like your other two. And then open it up and look out through it into your imagination and find yourself standing before a door with a sign on it that says, Journey of the Soul. And then open the door and enter. And now you find yourself in something you can only think of as a library because the walls are lined with bookshelves and they are filled with books. There are big, comfortable stuffed chairs tucked into the corners of this room with ottomans to put your feet up. And you can just imagine yourself losing an afternoon sitting here reading in the peace and quiet of this place. There's a feeling of otherworldliness here, a hush. that somehow feels sacred. And the room is well lit, but not too bright. And it's funny, you can't see any windows. There are no lamps, but still you can see perfectly. The light simply exists here. And now something catches your eye. On one of the bookshelves on the left, it seems as if one book begins to glow with light, enough to get your attention. So walk over to this book now and take it off the shelf. And your name is written on the cover. So take that book now, walk over to one of those comfy chairs and have a seat. And before you open this book, just hold it in your hands for a moment and breathe deeply. Now the sign on the door to this place said, Journey of the Soul. And now you have a book in your hands that has your name as the title. It shined its own specific light to make sure you saw it among the others. And now, sitting here holding it, you realize there must be some information about your soul's journey written in your book. So take a moment now before you open the book and ponder a deep desire you have, something you really want in your heart and soul, something you think would really make you happy. And it doesn't have to be a lofty thing or an important thing, although it may be. Don't judge what it is. Whatever it is that you really desire, that's what matters. Just think about a strong desire you have for something in life. Good. Now, in a moment, I'm going to ask you to open the book to any random page, any page at all. And no matter what page you open to, there'll be a sentence, just one sentence, that gives you some guidance or insight about this desire on a soul level. It might read, if you were meant to be a doctor or work a garden or be a Broadway star, right? It might read, you were meant to be courageous in this lifetime. You were meant to have a great sense of humor. It might simply say, love yourself better. Whatever is written in the book of your soul's journey is exactly what you need to read and know at this time. So when you open the book to any random page, read the one sentence there, take a moment to contemplate what it's telling you, and also what that means in that big picture. So go ahead and do that now. Open the page and read the sentence. Good. The book of your soul's journey gave you a message you needed to hear. And there is one more message for you. So go ahead now and turn the page, turn to the very next page, and there you see a sentence and it reads, what are you waiting for? That is a good question. Think about it. What are you waiting for? Now, it's amazing, but there must be something about sitting in this place, this sacred place between the worlds, that makes it easy for you to see that just about every answer you ever came up with to the question, what are you waiting for, is really rather weak. There will never be a better time. You will never be younger or more ready than you are right now. And really, all you have to do is take one step, one action toward your desire, your soul's reason for coming back. And so you feel resolved now from here on out that whenever you feel stuck or uncertain or lethargic, afraid or dismissive of your dream, you'll ask yourself this question, what am I waiting for? And each time you come up with answers, you'll see how meaningless many of them are. So go ahead and close the book and hold it in your lap for a moment, one very precious minute. It really doesn't matter if what you came back here to do is big or small. You are here to do it, and time moves swiftly. If you need to come back again in your next life for more experiences, ensure that they will be new ones so that you know your soul is evolving, which means do the thing now in this life. Don't wait. Play big. Go for it. Don't waste one precious minute. So take the book back to the shelf where you found it now and slip it back on the shelf right where it was waiting for you. And know that you can come back here at any time in your own meditations and journeys and do more reading if you'd like, but you got what you came for today. So then step back up to the library door that you entered, step back out of it, and walk yourself back here to the sanctuary and gently open your eyes. You know, my friends, with all the madness going on in the world, hurricanes and earthquakes and floods and fires and terrible governmental actions or inactions and massacres and everyone on edge, what are you waiting for? What are we waiting for? Even if you only take one small step toward your desires, knowing that they are to benefit this crazy, weary old world that needs it so much. Do it. Do it now. Ask for the raise. Take the class. Submit the manuscript. Ask him out on a date. Audition. Interview. Fall in love. Get some answers. Clear up the past. Liberate yourself. Do it. Don't waste another precious minute. Recently, I came across a beautiful poem written by John Pavlovitz, and I want to share it with you now. On the day I die, a lot will happen. A lot will change. The world will be busy. On the day I die, all the important appointments I made will be left unattended. The many plans I had yet to complete will remain forever undone. The calendar that ruled so many of my days will now be irrelevant to me. All the material things I so chased and guarded and treasured will be left in the hands of others to care for or to discard. The words of my critics, which so burdened me, will cease to sting or capture anymore. They'll be unable to touch me. The arguments I believed I'd won will not serve me or bring me any satisfaction or solace. All my noisy incoming notifications and texts and calls will go unanswered. Their great urgency will be quieted. My many nagging regrets will all be reassigned to the past, where they should have always been anyway. Every superficial worry about my body that I ever labored over, about my waistline or my hairline or my frown lines, will fade away. My carefully crafted image, the one I worked so hard to shape for others here, will be left for them to complete anyway. The sterling reputation I once struggled so greatly to maintain will be of little concern for me anymore. All the small and large anxieties that stole sleep from me each night will be rendered powerless. The deep and towering mysteries of life and death that so consumed my mind will finally be clarified in a way that they could never be before where I lived. These things will certainly all be true on the day that I die. Yet for as much as will happen on that day, one more thing will happen. On the day I die, the few people who really know and truly love me will grieve deeply. They will feel a void. They will feel cheated. They will not feel ready. They will feel as though a part of them died as well. And on that day, more than anything in the world, they will want more time with me. I know this from those I love and grieve over. And so knowing this, while I am still alive, I'll try to remember that my time with them is finite and fleeting, and so very precious, and I'll do my best not to waste a second of it. I'll try not to squander a priceless moment worrying about all the other things that will happen on the day I die, because many of those things will either not be my concern or they'll be beyond my control. Friends, those other things have an insidious way of keeping you from living even as you live, vying for your intention, competing for your affections. They rob you of the joy of this unrepeatable, uncontainable, ever-evaporating now with those who you love and want only to share it with you. Don't miss the chance to dance with them while you can. It's easy to waste so much daylight in the days before you die. Don't let your life be stolen every day by all that you believe matters, because on the day you die, much of it simply won't. Yes, you and I, we will die one day. But before that day comes, let us live.